This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 20 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
David, we have a new sponsor for the podcast, GoEngineer.
Yes, GoEngineer provides product design tools that help you realize your concept quickly and efficiently.
Right, things like SolidWorks 3D CAD software, 3D printers for rapid prototyping, and reverse engineering. They do design validation and a whole lot more.
So we would like you to visit the UAV Digest/GoEngineer and have a look and support our sponsor.
All right, David, thanks. And what are we talking about this episode?
Hooray! The FAA released their 6 sites for UAV testing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. They said they were going to do that by the end of December 2013, and as the last few days of the month approached, I was getting a little bit nervous, but they came through.
Yeah, well, December 31st, you can't get much later than that in December, let alone the year. So, but congratulations to the FAA for actually keeping their promise, and we have quite a few press releases, and I think, Max, we're going to talk about the 6 that were chosen, and we're going to break it down and look at each individual site and why they won. And what I don't think people realize is each site has a very different mission statement that they're looking into. So it's they're taking specific topics, and each site is going to work on that, all being sewn together by the FAA. And of course, the FAA headquarters is in Atlantic City, New Jersey. So I guess we should start talking about sites, huh?
That's right. And just to baseline everybody, I'm sure most of our listeners already know this, but just to be sure, we should reiterate that the FAA, what they've done is they've announced these 6 congressionally mandated UAS research and test sites. Now, that's part of the U.S. roadmap that integrates UAS into the national airspace. As I'm sure everyone will recall, that roadmap describes a number of different things that have to be studied, determined, and established so that UAS can be integrated into the airspace. And it's through these 6 test sites that a lot of that work is going to be performed. And so, yeah, why don't we launch off and kind of run through the list and see what we know at this point anyway about each of those sites.
I guess we'll start off with the farthest one from where we are. It's the University of Alaska. Now, these sites, even though they are specific to one area or university or something, can involve multiple states. And the University of Alaska is one of those things where their geography is 7 different climatic zones, and they also have locations for testing in Hawaii and Oregon. I saw somewhere on the internet that it made perfect sense for the University of Hawaii people to want a site in Hawaii. Who wouldn't want that? So, you want to go over what their mission statement is?
Sure. Their mission is to look at standards for unmanned aircraft categories, state monitoring and navigation, and safety standards for UAS operations. So those are the areas that they're going to concentrate on.
State monitoring is interesting because it's you don't think the FAA, normally the FAA to defer to states. Usually they're the prime march. So it's going to be this is an interesting facet of that organization. And of course, Hawaii. Roe Bailey, Deputy Director of the Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration, ACUASI, at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, says, there's an enormous pent-up demand for the opportunity to legally test the systems because it's been extremely difficult for manufacturers to do so. You have to agree with that statement, right, Max?
Oh, absolutely. So many folks, so many companies, so many interests are just chomping at the bit to develop applications, and they've been stymied in that by the fact that the FAA won't allow commercial operations yet. So I think that the deputy director here is certainly, as many others, can see that there are a lot of opportunities, a lot of value that can come from this. And this kind of starts the process of moving towards a point where we can actually operate some of these things commercially.
So from rain, snow, and downright gorgeous, or volcanoes, we'll throw that in, we go to the desert. And the next one is actually the state of Nevada. Geographically, it's pretty rugged. And they do have climate diversity, meaning hot zones and cold zones. But what are they going to focus on, Max?
So they're going to look at UAS standards and operations, operator standards, certification requirements, also how air traffic control procedures can evolve with the introduction of UAS into the civil environment, and how to integrate with the next-gen ETC system. So these are all also very important things to study and to understand.
And I think Nevada's got a leg up about integration because the primary base for the United States Air Force Predators is Creek Air Force Base in Nevada, and they've been integrating in with the military airspace. So I think they have a head up into the integration portion of it.
And here in Nevada, we see the governor having been involved in this process, and in many of the 24 states that applied to be test sites, we saw this where local governments or state governments, academia, and so forth, tried to help this process along because they saw the value. But in Nevada, the governor is Brian Sandoval, and he's quoted as saying in this article that we see, with the climate and airspace of Nevada, we are uniquely equipped to expand the development of UAVs. We have also partnered with private industry and academia to establish the curriculum necessary to create the UAS civilian workforce of the future in Nevada. Our state has been preparing for this selection, and we are ready to enter this new era of aviation history. And, you know, David, I don't think that he's really overstating this at all. I mean, in terms of opportunities for employment, opportunities for commerce, and the fact that this is really, it really is a new era.
It's pumped, primed, and somebody needs to open up the valve. It's sitting there, and I think this is a huge step. And Nevada, whereas some of these things are universities being the headquarters of it, Nevada has the Nevada Institute for Autonomous Systems, NIAS, and the Unmanned Aircraft Systems Program Management Office. So it's a state-sanctioned nonprofit leading Nevada's candidacy for the effort to garner the FAA UAS test site designation. But I'm sure that will transition into a for-profit or a state-run organization to monitor Nevada's progress in the UAV field.
Now, one thing, David, you and I are trying to do, of course, is try to capture a number of things about each of these test sites, including, you know, what's the actual organization that's going to take the lead in this, what's their website or their social media presence, things like that. So, and we've also been speaking to some of them about what their plans are and getting some representatives from the test sites on this podcast. So we very much look forward to that, because we have a lot of questions, I think, about how this is going to work.
I think we have a lot of questions. And also, I think if any of our listeners are directly involved with any of these organizations, reach out to us at feedback@theuavdigest.com and let us know, because we want to highlight what these organizations are doing. This is very positive news and positive forward-thinking stuff. And like the Nevada governor said, it's a new age in aviation. So we're going to keep pushing forward. And don't be surprised if we get some guests on from various organizations. So let's hop across the country to the one that I think will have the most effect on our pilot friends from our various podcasts. New York's Griffiths International Airport, which was originally Griffiths Air Force Base, a B-52 base. And the geography, well, the geography is upstate New York, so right now they're in the middle of a blizzard as we record this. But more to the point, it's integration, and their mission is to integrate the congested northeast airspace.
Right, which is certainly a challenge. And that's a good one, too, because, you know, I can imagine Nevada and some of the other test sites being in fairly remote areas. And so it makes sense for them to work on some of the aspects of this that are most appropriate for those remote areas or can be safely conducted in those remote areas. But the reality is that in the end, UAS operation has to be successful and safe in congested areas as well. And so I think the FAA was wise to select one of the test sites, at least, to be operating in that kind of environment. But their mission is to look at test and evaluation, verification and validation of processes under FAA safety oversight. And this one, which I think is kind of the big one, sense and avoid capabilities for UAS, right? That's the technology that's not really there yet, and that certainly has to be very robust when it comes to safe operation of unmanned vehicles in the airspace.
And the main organization that's leading this is the Northeast UAS Airspace Integration Research Alliance. I like this, newair.org. A regional alliance of private industry, academic institutions, and military assets and operations in Northeast, based in New York and in Massachusetts. So it's pulling a lot of the integral that area together, like Massachusetts Institute of Technology in the New York states, and it's good to see good old Griffiths returning to a very prosperous future. So
Griffiths is in upstate New York, as you mentioned, David. Isn't that somewhere east of Syracuse, up in that region?
Yeah. And New Air is headquartered in Syracuse. So you're upstate, middle state. You'd find it on one of the exits on the thruway if anybody knows New York. So,
and this is the site that's closest to where I live, David. So maybe there's a road trip in my future.
Well, Syracuse isn't that much farther for me, so I was thinking that maybe we could meet there for a road trip.
I like that idea.
It's like 3 hours away for me and probably four hours for you. So, yeah, we're definitely a road trip. Now, this one I don't think is going to qualify for a road trip easily, and that's the North Dakota Department of Commerce. Geography, temperate continental climate zone, mean cold, snowy, and North Dakota's got some really nice summers, having been there for Sturgis. So why don't you take it away with the mission statement?
So what the North Dakota Department of Commerce is going to look at is UAS airworthiness essential data. They're going to validate high reliability link technology. Now, and I assume that that's communications links. Is that what that means, David?
Yeah, I would assume that, you know, the back and forth between the UAV and the pilot on the ground or the operator. I guess we call them pilots. Correct me if I'm wrong, folks. But we don't want our pilot friends to use their scenario. Well, what if one gets away from the operator? So we definitely need that back and forth technology there.
Yes, that's very important. And another area that they're going to look at is human factors. They're going to do some research into human factors. And we also see in some of the press reports that local officials are also hoping to look specifically into agricultural applications. Of course, that would be big in North Dakota, as well as other regions in the country. I think many people are now considering agricultural applications to be amongst the largest category for UAVs. We see that kind of over and over again. So if the Department of Commerce in North Dakota also focuses on that, I think that's a great thing.
UAVs monitoring chickens.
Yeah, chickens and corn and...
But the headquarters of this is the University of North Dakota, which we're kind of familiar with because one of our guests, Martin Rotler, is a graduate of there. And it's an open area, and it's got a big University of North Dakota has a big aviation community, so it's a very good candidate.
Yeah, a good choice.
So we go directly south from cold North Dakota to Corpus Christi, Texas, otherwise known as Texas A&M University. Hot, sunny Gulf of Mexico, definitely different climate from our various other ones. And its mission statement?
They're going to be looking at system safety requirements for UAS vehicles and operations, and also protocols and procedures for airworthiness testing. These, again, are really critical and important areas to look at.
Yeah, and of course, airworthiness testing is something that, as these UAVs change, and the airworthiness certificate is a very important part of an aircraft. So that's definitely, again, it's standards. And that's not to say there isn't overlap between all of these organizations, but they do have primary focuses. And I'm sure that the FAA will try to swap the data between the universities and such as they come up, because one discovery or one set of standards might apply to another university's thing. So as we talk about these six sites, keep in mind that they really are six sites under the FAA, and there's going to be changes back and forth. Corpus Christi, of course, has got fine weather, and they have been looking at ways for the technologies to be used for mapping seagrass, detecting oil spills, which is big for the Gulf of Mexico, wildfires, hurricane monitoring, and even counting herds for ranchers. So there we go again, agriculture and cattle.
Yeah, and David, just to go back real quick to what you said just a minute ago, on the overlap between the test sites, and one thing that we need to discover is, how are the activities of these test sites to be coordinated? How do they keep each other informed of the results? How do they get put together, this information disseminated not only across the sites, but also to the FAA and to the industry in general? So sort of the overall framework under which these test sites are going to operate is something that we're very interested in learning more about.
And I don't think that's actually been mapped out. I mean, we'll be honest, we don't think that's actually been mapped out. These have been just announced, and now they've been working hard to get their opportunities. Well, now the opportunity's there. Now comes the hard work, getting the research done and all of the factors that you just talked about.
And an interesting aspect with the Texas site is that we see in biz journals that the Association of Unmanned Vehicles International produced a report that showed the economic impact of Texas getting an FAA test site. And that report showed it to be worth $8 billion statewide. Is that $8 billion across the U.S. or just Texas?
$8 billion. $8 billion statewide for each test site, $260 million for South Texas alone.
That's right, and that's over the next 10 years. And also, the report talked about the creation of about 1,200 jobs, so significant there.
There was a lot of governors looking at seeing dollar signs on this. Then last but not least, we have Virginia Tech, or the Virginia Polytechnical Institute and State University. Their geography locations are Virginia, Maryland, and New Jersey. So they're playing closest to home. And their mission is?
UAS failure mode testing, and operational and technical risk areas.
When the data links break down from North Dakota, and or they're flying into bad weather in Alaska, this is where all this data is going to go. What happens when a UAS fails? How do you safely get it back to the ground? How do you safely sense and avoid, which is New York? So you can see how all of these come together. And Virginia Tech has the Virginia Center of Autonomous Systems. I know that Rutgers University in New Jersey will be mining the data that they're getting, and they are also directly related with the FAA Test Center in New Jersey. So this is going to be a lot of data mining, and again, what happens when something goes wrong? So another one of those test sites that our pilot friends need to monitor and see how their successes are.
So if you're listening to this and you sense a certain amount of excitement in our voices, I think that that's because, you know, we're finally transitioning from plans and objectives and roadmaps and talk to actual action, or at least that's what we expect to happen next. So this is the first step in that process. I think that we'll see some really interesting work come out of these six test sites, these six test locations. Will certainly start to surface some of the issues, some of the solutions for those issues, and move forward in terms of getting commercial applications for unmanned aerial systems moving ahead. Now, this is not going to happen fast, right? We're still talking a period of several years, I think. But at least this is where the action really starts, I think. Wouldn't you agree, David?
While it's a long-term plan, I think there's going to be a lot of these organizations have been already working towards their goals. So I think we're going to see a lot of interesting stuff in the next 6 months to a year and going further. So I'm hoping that they're all have done their ramp up, and now that the starting gun has gone off, they're up to speed and they can start providing us research that will help us integrate the UAS airspace. It's really cool. One of the things Max and I have both said since this is one of the enjoyment we have about this is we don't know what we don't know. And this is going to be we're going to get a lot of stuff that's going to come out of this and discoveries, and this will be the future. And we're looking forward to getting all of these people on and starting a dialogue and being able to share them to you, our listeners.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, is that we want to be one of the conduits, certainly not the only one, but one of the conduits of information and communication between these test sites and all of you who are interested in this industry or in this hobby, depending on your perspective. So we'll really look forward to doing that in the coming months and probably the next couple of years.
Absolutely. And just because there was so much news this week, though, I have to talk about the news story this morning that we got from a listener, that evidently four people were arrested in Beijing for flying a quadcopter over Beijing International Airport and caused several airplanes to be diverted. Kind of impressive, and they were using it for a architectural survey, and evidently they didn't get permits from the Chinese Civil Aviation Authority, and all four are now sitting in jail for flying a quadcopter and endangering people. This is the kind of thing that we want to avoid. It's just kind of amazing.
Yeah, and justice in China tends to be swift and severe. And so maybe these guys are in a little bit more hot water than folks maybe in other countries who cause these kind of problems. But David, I think your point is valid and really important, which is that, you know, we have to be careful about how we use these unmanned aircraft, even though we've got a strong interest and desire to begin to apply these vehicles to some real-world problems and issues. But if we run too fast, too far, we're going to damage, well, not only bring in some personal risk, but also impact negatively others, and also damage the public perception of drones, right? We're back to that.
Yeah, it's never an octocopter or a quadcopter. It's a drone that flies into impact. So, I think overall it's been an exciting week, a lot of news, and we could go on for hours. I mean, the test sites have been flooding the waves with information, but it's a start, and we're looking forward to talking about it for many years to come.
Very good, David.
So I guess that makes us close to 30 minutes. Happy New Year to all of our listeners.
And so you've been listening to episode 20 of the UAV Digest. You can find show notes at theuavdigest.com, or you can use the shortcut, theuavdigest.com/20 for episode 20. And once again, please visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer and support our sponsor.
Well, that wraps it up. So we'll see you next week. This is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.